Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Jeff Annison, who is one of the co-founders of Legion M. Legion M is a company that's been on my radar for years, going back to Mandy, which is one of my favorite films of the 2010s. I love Mandy, the crazy Nick Cage movie. But you guys have been around for a while now, is what I'm getting at. And I wanted to talk to you about your business model, because it's different than most other business models for film producers, film distributors. You guys have kind of a crowdfunded model, but not really. It's kind of crowd equity. I want you to describe to my listeners what it is Legion M is and how you guys actually do your fundraising.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. So Legion M uses equity crowdfunding, which is fundamentally different. Most people think of crowdfunding, they think of Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that sort of thing. And those are all donation-based crowdfunding, where you are making a donation in exchange for a pre-sale of the product or your name in the credits or coffee mug or whatever it is. That was all that was legal up until about 2016, when the Securities and Exchange Commission passed new laws called the Jobs Act that allowed you to actually invest in something, whether that's a company or a movie or a line of booze or whatever it is. And so Legion M was literally established because of those new laws that went into effect. And the idea was to create a movie studio that was designed from day one to be owned by fans. And the reason for that, which we can talk about, is there's just a ton of competitive, defensible, long-term competitive advantages that you have if you've got a studio that is built and owned by a large community of fans as opposed to corporate Wall Street investors.
So let's dive into this a little bit, because there's a similar model out there. You know, I had one of the guys from Angel on, Angel Studios, a couple years back when their big hit was in theaters. Sound of Freedom was huge. Lots of people were, you know, they were doing the buy one ticket, you know, pay it forward thing, which was its own separate thing. But they have kind of a similar model, right? Which is like people invest in their movies and they invest in the marketing campaigns, etc. Is that kind of what you guys are doing? Is that a good shorthand for folks?
I think, Angel has done some equity crowdfunding as a company. They've allowed people to invest in some movies. They've allowed people to invest in the marketing of some movies. And they've allowed, they did one fundraising round, and it might have even been before they became Angel Studios, but back when they were VidAngel, before they pivoted into film and television. They're a venture-backed company, and now they're a public company. And to be honest, I don't think they're doing any equity crowdfunding anymore. They just shut down their equity crowdfunding portal. They still have Pay It Forward, but I think that at a high level, yeah, we share a lot of DNA with that element of their business and the fan-forward nature of Angel Studios. What's different is Legion M was literally built from day one to be owned by fans, period. And so we've raised at this point over $25 million from fans. That has been what's powered our studio for the past 10 years.
So let's get into a couple of the different avenues people use to invest with you guys, right? So there is basically investing in Legion M, rounds of funding of Legion M through, you know, raising money from users, raising money from, you know, folks like me. If I wanted to invest $500 in Legion M, you guys do that occasionally, right? So what, explain what folks do there. What is that process like, and how does that help get these movies acquired and distributed?
Sure. So there's actually three different ways that you can invest in Legion M. The first one is the one that you're talking about, which is investing in the studio. And like I said, we launched 10 years ago. It was May 16th, 2016. And I know that because that's literally the day that the Jobs Act went into effect. And we were the first company in the world to take advantage of it in the United States. And so We've raised over $25 million from over 60,000 investors. Our minimum investment is $100. And we've got people that have put in hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so, you know, on average, it's probably about $400 or $500. When you invest in Legion M, you're literally buying stock in the company. The best way I could describe it, it's like if you could go back in time and invest in Disney back when it was starting up and before it was a public company. So when you invest in a startup at that stage, before it's public, it means a couple things. First of all, it's very high risk because the fact is most startups fail. I mean, that's, you know, that's the same odds that Walt Disney started when he was founding Disney, as Larry Page and Sergey Brin started when they were founding Google, you know, to all that. But the companies that succeed can go on and change the world. So when you buy stock in Legion M, you're making a high risk, high reward, you know, potential for high reward bet that if we can get big enough, you own stock in the company. So our goal is to get big enough to IPO or to have some sort of liquidity event where now your shares are publicly traded on the NASDAQ, or, you know, get acquired by a larger studio or something like that, that where you can sell your shares. And you know, the risk is that if we go out of business first, then your shares will be worth nothing more than a tax write-off.
I want to hit on this just a little bit. So in the last round of fundraising you did, I believe the shares were valued at $2.10 a share, something like that.
Correct.
But to be clear, you know, if you were to invest, if I invest $500, I get 250 shares or whatever. I could not sell those. It's not like I could trade those to people. They're not on the market. It's just something I have.
Technically can trade them, but it's kind of weird because you have to like find your own buyer. They're private company shares. And so you see this, like some people, like if you own stock in SpaceX, right? If you're a founder or an early employee at SpaceX, you could sell your shares if you can find a buyer. And so, but really it's not liquid in the way that most people think of it. You can't go to Robinhood and sell your shares. It's a path that's a total pain. And because of that, very few people do it, but we have had dozens of people over the history that because of, you know, a death or a divorce or some sort of life event have taken the time and effort to go and sell their shares. And again, that's more people generally that have thousands or tens of thousands of dollars, as opposed to someone that's got $100 or a couple $100. It's just not worth your time, probably.
Sure, sure. Okay, so that's one way to invest. What are the other two ways?
So starting a few years ago, we allowed people to invest directly in films. And we've had three films that we've done with what we call fan-first financing. The first one was the William Shatner documentary, You Can Call Me Bill. The second one was My Dead Friend Zoe, which has Morgan Freeman and Ed Harris and Natalie Morales and Sonequa Martin-Green, that won the Audience Award at South by Southwest a couple of years ago. And the third one is currently in post-production. It's called Fade to Black. But in that case, what we effectively did was we took a typical film financier position and syndicated it out amongst small investors. So rather than having one investor putting in a couple $1 million, we had thousands of investors who in aggregate equals a couple $1 million. And those people, just like a typical film financier, they get their returns in the form of royalties based on the movies. So as money comes in, it literally just gets divvied up amongst those people as it would if it was a traditional film financier. And so we've done three of those, and like studios, you know, independent film is, again, very high risk. You can make money in independent film, and it's possible to make a lot if you have a hit, but most independent films don't make money. And, you know, it's important. It's very important for us to be upfront with people about kind of what they're getting into. But the nice thing is also you get like your name in the credits and you get the opportunity to go to the premiere, you know, all the kind of fun stuff like that.
Sure. Let me ask. So for these movies, were these acquisitions or were these from the ground up? These were produced from the ground up.
Yeah. Okay. So literally these were movies that we developed, financed, and produced.
Gotcha. Okay, and then the third way.
So the third way is a brand new thing that we just launched about 2 months ago, which is called the Legionum Film Fund. And in that case, people are investing in distribution deals. And I don't know how fluent you or your listeners are in like P&A, marketing money, distribution money. It from a risk profile, it's like the opposite end of the spectrum, because P&A money, acquisition money, distribution money tends to be last in, first out, meaning that, you know, you're acquiring a finished film, you're putting the marketing, it's the last thing that goes in a month or two before the movie releases. And then once the movie releases, it's the first thing to get paid out from every dollar coming in until you get paid back. Plus, there's typically some sort of capped return, maybe 15%. And so we are, again, those are deals that are very common in the industry. And right now they're just, they're large P&A investors that take advantage of those sorts of deals. But again, we're allowing fans to have a part of that. And structured it in this film fund, which is really cool because, you know, you put your money in. We invested in the distribution of one film. The first one was Fackham Hall, which came out earlier this year. And then as money comes back from one movie, it automatically rolls over to the next. So if you think of like investing in a movie or investing in a startup as like a big, hairy swing for the fence, you know, high risk, high reward, this is the opposite. This is about trying to string together singles and doubles that are going to add up over time to compound and become wins.
Well, let's dive into Fackham Hall here, because this is something that was just in theaters. Folks may have gone to see it and now it's on streaming. It's on VOD. People can watch it there. And I'm curious what the actual process for generating this revenue and getting it to back to people looks like here. So, right. So you guys release Fackham Hall in theaters. It grosses about $1 million domestically, another $3 million or so overseas, if I remember correctly. And so how does that money get divvied up?
Yeah, so it's a great question. First of all, our deal for Fackham Hall was just domestic. It was a British movie, but there was a completely different set of players that dealt with anything outside of the United States. We partnered with Bleecker Street, the distributor, and we co-distributed it with them. So from our standpoint, effectively, we bought in to that project. You know, if you add up the minimum guarantee that they had to pay to acquire the film and the P&A money that they put behind it, we contributed a percentage of that money, a significant percentage. And then once, as revenue comes in over the next 20 years, we get a commensurate percentage out of the deal. And so that includes everything from box office to VOD, premium VOD and regular VOD, streaming. The movie came out on HBO Max. Airplanes, a big part of this deal was they had a great airline deal, worldwide airline deal that got a significant amount of money. But basically, as that money comes in, whatever money comes in gets distributed proportionally between Legionum and Bleecker Street. And for all of the people who invested in that movie via the film fund, then the money that comes into Legionum gets distributed proportionally compared to how much each individual investor put into that project. And like I said, it's structured as a, you know, last in, first out investment. And so those investors are getting all of the money as it comes in up until they reach that cap, which in the case of Fackham Hall is 15%. And then after that, that investment is over for them. So effectively for Legionum, like Legionum and the Film Fund work hand in hand, because the people that are providing the relatively safe money of a P&A distribution investment are getting the quick returns. And then Legionum is basically growing a library, you know, because we'll get money from that film over the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Is that do you guys have, is that the length of the deal? Is it 20 years? Is it in perpetuity? Like what are the
no,
rights?
Distribution deals are generally termed, and you know, it might be 10 years or it might be 20 years. I think Facom Hall, if I remember correctly, is a 20 year deal, but if something hasn't been recouped, it gets extended and it's up to 25. But I think at this point it should be a 20 year deal.
Well, let me. Okay, so you there was a limit of how much I was looking at your guys' website. I was poking around. There was a limit of how much could be invested in this. I assume just to recoup however much you guys had put up. What was the limit? Was it $1 million? Like, what was the actual amount that could?
Yeah, it was $1 million, and basically, you know, we didn't want to oversell basically. So it's pretty much dollar for dollar. And we ended up raising about $1 million, but so we, at that point we said, okay, you can still invest in the film fund. You can invest in the film fund today, but the ship has passed for Facom Hall because we've kind of we've already filled up that allocation. And so we're preparing right now to announce the next two films for the film fund that the money will go into next. And so like, that's actually kind of cool because what's happening is, so our next film will be announcing soon, probably within the next week or two. And we'll raise money for time, and we've got an amount. So if there's a cap, there's only so much that we can raise for that film. And there will also be a time term limit. Like, okay, like this is where we're going to call the cutoff date. And if we haven't raised the cap, then whatever we've raised at this point will be it. But that movie will be financed by both new investors that are coming in, as well as everybody who invested in Facom Hall. We don't know how long it's going to take to get the total return, like the total principal back plus the 15%. But we expect that 50%-ish of it will be back in time for this movie so that those funds will immediately roll over and be reinvested into the second movie in the train.
So let me, all right. So let's, I just want to stay on Facom Hall because it's a movie that's out. We have some data on it. So the film comes out December of last year. Again, it makes about, let's say, $1 million domestically.
Yeah, it was about $1 million. Obviously, in the U.S.
There's a split with the theaters. Theaters take a cut. So I won't ask you to divulge any actual terms here, but let's say 50-50. Then there's a split between you and Bleecker Street, and then so I'm just throwing out numbers here. Let's say $300,000 or something like that. That $300,000 has come in and refilled part of the $1 million investment. Is that basically, do I have that right? And that's just from theatrical. That's before VOD, any of that. Do I have that basically right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say, again, just speaking rough numbers, like you said, the theaters keep about half. It's a little bit more for independent film. It's a little bit less for big studio films, but the theaters keep half and the rest of that money comes in. And then it comes into what's called the waterfall, right? Because there are things that have to be paid. If it's a SAG project, you have to pay union residual. So that's something that comes off the top. Sometimes there's just recoupable expenses that are put up there for one reason or another, and that comes off the top. But then, like you said, the money comes in, Legion M gets our percentage, and then that money gets distributed back to the people in the film fund.
What if it had been, all right, so let's say it had been an enormous hit. Let's say it had grossed $100 million domestically, right?
Yep.
Huge hit. People love Downton Abbey parody movie. They go see it. Everybody go see it. And then, there would obviously be more than the $1 million investment, more than the $1 million investment plus 15% back to the investors. Does the rest of that money then just go into the film fund to acquire more films? Like, what happens to the excess there?
It's really, it's a risk reward sort of trade-off. So in what you're, the example that you're providing, if the movie becomes a monster hit, you would way, way, way rather be the company that is responsible for producing that movie, right? Than the P&A investor in the movie. Because mm-hmm. the P&A investor is typically going to get their 15% or, you know, and then they're done and that's it. And so it's a capped return, but it's also a very safe return because mm-hmm. the same way that most independent films lose money when you're the producer, most films P&A money gets repaid with the full return. So it's I think that's what's kind of interesting about Legion M is that we're providing now fans like multiple ways to invest. If you want to swing for the fences, you can invest and you can own stock in Legion M. And so if we have a movie that comes that ends up becoming a monster hit, then that's where the value accrues is with Legion M. But it's high risk. And if that doesn't happen, you know, if the odds catch up with us, then it's a bad investment. On the flip side, if you want to play things conservatively and, you know, would prefer to have something that's safe and secure and is almost always going to get you some sort of return on your money and has very low chance of losing all your money, and is also liquid. That's one thing we haven't kind of touched upon, but the film fund is actually liquid. So unlike buying stock in something, when you invest in the film fund, you can actually redeem, you can cash out your money at any time. And so if you stay in it for a year and you know, you do well with Facom Hall and you do well with something else, and then you decide that you want to buy a house or something like that, you need to liquidate it. That's something that you can do with the film fund that you can't do if you've bought into a high risk, long-term investment like a movie studio or investing in the production of a film.
To be clear, though, if I understand how you've described Facom's revenue so far, if I had put $100 in the film fund in December or, you know, whenever the term was, if I had put $100 in, I probably wouldn't be able to cash out $100 right now, right? Because it hasn't paid
correct.
That money back.
Correct. Yeah. The way that the redemptions work is that if you said today, I want to redeem my membership interest, we would say, okay, well, of your money, of that $100 that you put in, we've got $10 of it because that's what we've gotten back from Facom Hall, mm-hmm. or that was the money that was unallocated. We can give you that $10 back right now. The rest of it, you're going to have to wait as it comes back from Facom Hall. We can return it to you. Unless, we do have the ability, if there's enough reserves in the fund, we have the ability to accelerate your payment. So even if we haven't received the money of yours that we've invested in Facom Hall, we can effectively cash you out completely.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. But I guess if I said I want to get my money back, it's not like I wouldn't be taking a $90 loss if I took the $10 out.
No, correct.
So it's still there. It's still there. And, you know, you can, okay.
It's gotcha. Just, that's we don't have it because of the fact that that right. Monday, you know, $90 of that sure. is still invested in Facom Hall. But every quarter when we get our returns from Facom Hall, that capital would be available to you. And you've told us that you want to cash out. So we're not going to roll it over automatically into another project. We just wait until you'd have to wait until it becomes available. Like I said, unless there's enough reserves in the system that we it meets the parameters of something that we can accelerate the payment for you as an investor. Like if you want the money, we'd like to give you the money as soon as possible, even if we don't, mm-hmm. we haven't received it. But if we know that it's coming, then we're happy to cash you out.
Yeah. It's an interesting business model because it does kind of use this the fandom, right? Like there's this idea of like we're gonna get the fandom excited. They're gonna get out there. They will be, you know, they will proselytize. They will be out there. Go see the movie. And you see that it's interesting just looking at the list of films. There are some movies where this makes a little more sense. For instance, the William Shatner documentary or the Origins of Alien documentary. I saw a lot of things. I saw a lot of people talking about those movies, you know, on social media in the circles I run with. And then there's the Kevin Smith movie, the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, which again, like, there's a built-in fan base there. I get that. How do you guys kind of capitalize on that? How do you get people excited? How do you get them out there with a message of like, hey, this thing is out now. You got to get folks out there to see it.
It's a great question. And I mean, really, that's the competitive advantage of Legion M, right? The whole idea, Hollywood, as you know, is so much of it is based on being risk averse. And it's not, not in a bad way. It's just movies are inherently expensive things to create. And if you just look at the economics of the movie industry as a whole, like it's a hit driven industry. Most films don't make money. I think even at the studio level, I believe most films don't make money, but at the studio level, the hits, the massive hits are so big and so powerful that it dramatically outweighs the losses. And so studios, because of that, because they're so risky, that's why you see this reliance on existing IP and, you know, A-list actors and all the things that you do as a studio to de-risk a movie. If you put Ryan Gosling in something, there's a large group of people that are very much likely to see that movie just because they love Ryan Gosling. And if you had any other actor in it, it would be a much harder sell. It's the same thing with IP. And so the foundational idea behind Legion M is that if you have a studio that's owned by a large community of fans, you've got a competitive advantage because of the fact that you've got a large community of people that are paying attention to what you're doing. And, you know, they're going to come out and see it opening night and they're going to tell their friends about it because of the fact that they've been along for the ride since day one. They're part of it. I think that it's less in some ways about the fact if you've invested $100 in Legion M, it's less about like you're motivated financially, like, you know, wahaha, I'm going to, you know, turn that into more money for myself. But it's more that you're emotionally invested in Legion M and all the projects that we do. So when it comes time to release a film, a huge part of our playbook and a huge part of the things that we try and do is find novel and engaging ways to bring people out to the movies. And sometimes that's doing special screenings, or we've done rolling red carpet tours before. Sometimes it's ticket offers and Angel Studios. That was something that they relied on extensively, was their whole pay it forward program and 2-for-1 tickets for people who are part of the Angel Guild. And so there's a lot of stuff like that that we do. There's a lot of, we want to ultimately turn our investors, you know, our goal is not to get our 60,000 investors to come out to see a movie, but also to enable them to share it and to bring out their friends and to help advertise and market and gain awareness within their network of people. Because especially when it comes to independent film, one of the fundamental marketing challenges is just awareness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you're at the studio level, everybody knows your movie exists. Everybody knew that Project Hail Mary was coming out and they knew that Snow White was coming out. Like nobody didn't know, but they chose to see one or they didn't choose to see one based on the movie. On the flip side, if you look at the independent level, our movie, My Dead Friend Zoe, it's 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got Morgan Freeman and Ed Harris. It won the audience award at South by Southwest. It's literally one of the best reviewed movies in Morgan Freeman's career. Yet, if I line up 100 people at a shopping mall or wherever, probably 95 people have never even heard of the movie. And so, you know, for independent film especially, trying to get awareness is one of the fundamental challenges and one of the differences between success and failure. And our thesis is that if you've got a company, if you've got a large community of fans, you've got that advantage and you don't necessarily need to rely solely on IP and talent.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, again, I was going through some of the investment materials. One of the things you'd mentioned is, you know, studio, they spend $25 million advertising a movie because every movie they have to create a new audience. You have to create a new audience for Project Hail Mary. But they spent more than $25 million marketing Project Hail Mary. But, you know, you need to create the audience for Project Hail Mary. You need to create the audience for Devil Wears Prada 2. You need to create the audience for, you know, everything else that's in the theaters. And your thesis is, well, we are going to create one audience and have them come out. Though I'll just say, as a film fan, as somebody who enjoys movies, who writes about movies, who like reviews movies, I am skeptical, no offense, that there is the same audience for Mandy and also for Nandor, Fodor and the Talking Mongoose and Tolkien and Bat's Mare. So like there is obviously, I don't have a great question here, but I am curious if there is concern that there's too disparate a type of movie for to have that audience congeal for all of them.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very fair question. And we know that the movies that we do are not going to please everyone. And I mean, like you said, I mean, Mandy, I mean, talk about an outlier. I feel like there's a very small percentage of people that absolutely love that movie. And you're like, oh my God, what was that? And then there's a very large community of everybody else that was like, oh my God, what was that? Right. And not in a good way. And so, but I think that the way that we look at it is this, we're not programming so that every single one of our members is going to want to go to every single one of our movies. We are trying to find ways that even if this isn't a movie for you, that there's ways for you to maybe still expose it to friends of yours that may like it, right? I may not like horror movies, but I certainly know people who do like horror movies. And so we try and enable it that way to kind of, you know, cross-pollinate across everything. But I'd also say that like one of the things that we've learned is that over the years is that our community is actually pretty open to a lot of things. There are some things that are just kind of non-starters. Like a lot of people just don't like horror. Right. And again, like they just don't. But when you look at the breadth of our slate, we've seen, I'd say surprisingly little pushback from people who are like, oh my God, like I don't want to be associated with a movie like this. And I mean, to give you an example, one of the most popular projects, I'd say, within the Legion M community is a movie that we have in develop, which is called Defiant, which is a historical biopic about Captain Robert Smalls, who was an escaped enslaved man who stole a Confederate warship in the Civil War. And it's something that resonates with people at a lot of different levels. And I don't know that you can draw a direct line like, oh yeah, of course a Kevin Smith fan is going to like that. Or of course a Mandy fan is going to like it. Mm-hmm. But what we've just found through all of our extensive testing that we do and surveys and, you know, talking to investors is that people tend to have, I think, pretty broad taste for the most part. And so I think that we're not, you know, we initially thought that we might need to focus on a niche, whether that's horror or faith-based like Angel has. They've had incredible success in that space, or, you know, movies aimed at the Comic-Con crowd. And instead we found that the community is very open and to explore and try new things. I think what they value is things like creativity and originality and that sort of thing.
For the movies you guys are producing that you're making in-house, not the acquisitions, but the Legion M Productions, what's your target budget? Like what are you guys spending on a movie?
So the what I'd say is the stuff that we've done so far is kind of in the, you know, 5 million-ish range, give or take. And it's really largely a function of what we can raise and also what we think is a smart commercial bet. Meaning that, like I said, film, independent film is a very difficult ecosystem to try and make money in. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's not necessarily the sort of thing where a film with an $8 million budget is inherently more valuable than a film with a $6 million budget or a $4 million budget. You kind of need the right budget for the film and the budget allocated to the things that are most important. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what is most important then?
I think, well, generally it's, to me, like, to give you an example, one of the projects that we would love to produce, and we just haven't found the right one yet. We've got some really interesting candidates, but is a nice tight science fiction movie, right? Like Legion, we haven't done a lot in sci-fi, but we know from our community that sci-fi would be like a direct hit in the bullseye of what they're looking for. And so you could imagine that there is a, you know, a smart, elevated science fiction movie, something like Gattaca, for example. Gattaca was not a low budget movie, but there's a very low budget version of that movie that could exist because it doesn't rely on special effects and that sort of stuff. It's character driven. It's got smart science in it, and it's got just a amazing plot. But
something like Primer.
Yeah. Primer, Coherence. I don't know if you're familiar with Coherence. Sure. That's like a super low budget movie, but something like that. And so, yeah, if you've got a movie like that, that you could film that. I mean, I don't know what the budget on Primer was. I've heard that it was low. I know Coherence was literally like hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if you've got a version like that and you're like, okay, well, you know, if we increase the scale a little bit, maybe it doesn't all have to happen in one room, but, you know, kind of increase the scale, that's going to, you know, increase the budget to like $1 million, then that's probably a worthwhile spend, right? You're looking at it as a business person saying like, okay, like if I spend another $500,000 on this, am I going to get more than $500,000 back because of the fact it just feels bigger? One of the best things I think that you can spend money on is talent. In fact, with my dead friend, Zoe, we faced that question because the role that is played by Morgan Freeman was originally in our original plan was going to be played by just another actor that nobody would have heard of, would have done an amazing job as an actor, but didn't have any sort of name value or recognition. And so we faced the opportunity when we put it in front of Morgan Freeman and we found out that he'd do it. It was going to increase our budget by X, but we've got to do the math and say like, okay, well, is that worth it? And in that case, it's a slam dunk because, you know, when you put just Morgan Freeman's face on the poster and his name on the metadata, there's an incremental jump independent of everything else, whether the movie's good, bad, whatever. There's an incremental jump in the value of that movie, both domestically and in foreign rights. There's, you know, even people, you know, scrolling through it on networks. If you see, oh my God, I love Morgan Freeman, you're just more likely to take a look at the movie and even consider the movie because he's in there.
You mentioned foreign, and I wanted to ask about this. Are you guys doing foreign pre-sales? Like, are you, 'cause I know this is so. I've talked with folks on the show about this before, but foreign pre-sales, of course, are you go to a foreign market and you go to Austria and you say, if you give us $50,000, you can distribute this movie in Austria. Or, you know, you go to Japan, you give us $1 million, you can distribute it here. Is that part of your business model? Is that like, is that how you guys are putting these deals together?
Yeah, when it comes to production, 100%. I mean, as the producer, you own all the rights to the movie and you're either selling independently or you're pre-selling or you're selling after the fact with a sales agent or whatever it is. But it's always part of the calculus as a producer. When it comes to distribution, all of the deals that we've been focused on are domestic deals. And that's just because Legionem is actually available pretty much all around the world. We have investors in hundreds, literally, of countries. I think the only continent we don't have an investor on is Antarctica because nobody lives there. Our nexus, like 98% of our community lives in the United States, and we live in the United States. We understand the film market here. And so we haven't tried to distribute anything internationally.
Yeah. The state of play in film distribution right now is so interesting because you have, I mean, obviously you've got the big major studios, you have, indie, like mid-major indie brands like A24 and Neon, which are doing their thing. And then you have like, for instance, this, Iron Lung movie that came out, a couple months back by Markiplier, the YouTube guy, which was an enormous hit. Like, I don't think anybody saw coming outside of his YouTube fans. What do you see as the, I don't know, Legion M advantage? What is the niche that you guys have that you can be like, this is what we're, this is where we're attacking. This is where there's softness in the market. We can fill this in. Like, what is it? What's your vision for, like, things are changing. Everything is up in the air. This is what we're doing that is different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, things are changing on every level of the industry for a lot of different reasons. But Legion M, like I said, our focus is uniting fans, trying to find ways to celebrate movies, trying to find ways to leverage community to bring people out to the movies, trying to find ways to use our community of shareholders to raise awareness amongst their family and friends. And so I think that really, I don't think there's a better way to say it than that. Yeah, at the end of the day, distribution largely comes down to marketing. I mean, that's pretty much what the function is. How much awareness can you raise for your movie, and how many people can you convince to come out and spend $15 and watch it in the theater, or spend $15 to buy it on demand, or something like that. I mean, we live in a world where everybody knows that every movie is going to be streaming at some point. And, you know, we're completely deluged by amazing high quality content for the most part, right? Whether it's television or movies. I mean, there's so much content being made that you just can't even keep track of it anymore, let alone watch it, right? Like, I've got things on my watch list that I know that I'm never going to get to. And so I think the difference between what you watch versus something that is just on your watch list a lot of times is awareness and interest and people talking about it. And I think the difference between a movie that you want to go see in a theater versus something that you're just fine to wait until you can watch it on your couch, a lot of times is like, well, you know, what are your friends going to see? Like, half the movies that I go to are movies that I just like, oh my God, I got to see The Odyssey on a big screen, and I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan. I'm going to go see that in a theater no matter what. But the other half are like, yeah, sure, I'll see that. My friend's going. I want to hang out with my friend. My daughter's going. I want to hang out with her. And so I think that in this age where we're more disconnected than ever, where theatrical is harder than ever, community matters. And Legion M is designed first and foremost to be a community for people that love movies and want to see them with other people that love movies.
Look, you're speaking my language. I'm theater number one guy. So that's good to hear. My second to last question here is just, the economics of theatrical are very hard because you have to pay for marketing. You have to pay for production. You got to split with the theaters, et cetera. Are the economics on VOD better? Is it better? You know, every indie company, I talk to laments the fall of DVD, right? DVD used to be this huge portion of the waterfall. Like, that's where they would make the majority of their money, right? They're not in theaters, not really on TV, but DVD. That's gone. But it does feel like the economics of PVOD in particular are just more advantageous in terms of better cuts, better splits, better, you know, better access to people. Like, it's right there on their TVs. They don't have to go to a theater. And this pains me to say again, because I am theater number one guy, but like, that when you're sitting down there working out the financials, PVOD has to be, or VOD just in general, has to be an enormous part of your calculation, right?
It's an enormous part of the calculation when it comes to the monetization side. But when it comes to the marketing side, theatrical is just better. I think everybody agrees with that. And I think that the massive social experiment that we all went through during the pandemic and the specific business experiments that companies like AT&T did with releasing all of their films day and date after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Like, there were lessons learned from that. I was with Mike DeLuca at the Dallas International Film Festival, and he was doing a keynote address talking about exactly this. Warner Brothers, like, they learned conclusively that having a theatrical release helps every downstream element of the business. And so the way that I think of it is, it's not that you're market, like, when you market a theatrical release, you're not marketing your movie in theaters, you're marketing your movie. How many times have you seen a trailer for a movie that's playing in theaters? You don't go see it in theaters, but then you, when you stumble across it on demand, you're like, oh yeah, I wanted to watch this. So it's not that you're marketing the different windows, you're just marketing. And so if you're going to spend a dollar marketing something and you're like, okay, well, I can get a bite back at that dollar from theatrical and VOD and streaming, or I can skip theatrical and just try and get a dollar back from VOD and streaming, it's a no-brainer. And coupled with the fact that all of us as human beings, we ascribe more value, we place more value on films that play in theaters. Like, we just all, that's the way that we think of them.
Yeah. It feels like a real movie. You see a trailer for a movie in a theater. It feels like a real movie, you know?
100%.
All right. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything folks should know, either about Legion M or the film business or the world at large. What did we not discuss that we should have talked about?
Oh my God. You know, well, we didn't talk about AI, but honestly, that's probably a whole other podcast. Yeah. I think that you covered a lot. I mean, the industry is changing so fast right now, and you alluded to this earlier. And part of it is it's the changing viewing habits that, you know, we're still dealing with the ramifications of the pandemic. It's the corporate consolidation that's happening in the system. It's the fact that streaming fundamentally changed all of the economics of everything. And when you just look at the trajectory of Netflix, Hollywood existed for like 100 years and built this an enormous gated kingdom that was notoriously difficult to break in because of the power that was entrenched in the hands of the incumbents. And in the period of like, what, a decade, Netflix grew from being the sideline player that was doing DVD over mail to being hands down the most powerful, the most valuable company in Hollywood. Like, it's amazing. If you go look at the market cap of the major studios, Netflix is like twice what Disney is. Mm-hmm. And that includes, by the way, theme parks, ABC, ESPN, Hulu, like everything that Disney does, and it's worth half of what Netflix is. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, but it's like you alluded to earlier, when you're trying to sell people on going to see your new movie that's coming out in theaters, you're starting over from scratch each time with a new audience. You got to convince people, oh, this is a movie that's worth coming and buying a ticket for. Netflix has it the complete flip side. They've got your $15 a month. All they have to do is be good enough that you're not going to unsubscribe. They've got to be slightly better than whatever the other services that when times get tight and you decide you're going to cut, it's like, okay, no, I'm going to cut Peacock, but I can't cut Netflix because of this show, and this show. And so I think that's one whole thing that's fascinating about the industry is how much it's changed and how divergent the business models were. I think if you look back 10 or 20 years ago, you had a movie studio, and a movie studio was a movie studio, and this is what it does, and this was the economics, and you know, Disney was the best, or they were the biggest because they also had theme parks and you know, whatever. But now you've got the industry is dominated by Netflix, which is a pure play subscription model, Apple TV, which is trying to sell hardware, Amazon, where the movies are just a loss leader to get you to buy more toothpaste. Like, it's incredible how much the industry has changed. And that's even before we talk about AI and what that's going to do. But, yeah. You know, for us, we think that fundamentally, at the end of the day, even if AI makes movies someday, only human beings pay to watch them. And so we think that being owned by a large community of fans, the very people that are making the decisions every day that separate the winners and losers, is the most powerful place in the whole ecosystem that we could be.
Yeah. Jeff, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Sonny.
And again, I've been talking to Jeff Anison of Legion M. You go to their website, check them out. Lots of movies there. There's something for everyone, I can assure you. Again, I am one of that small sliver that is very in demandy, but it's fine. And my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. See you guys then.